Why am I here? Is there a God? Does he care about me? Why is there death and suffering in the world? What happens when you die?
Wow. These are big questions. Today on Real Family Talk, we'll look for some big answers to these and other questions you may be asking as well.
Spiegel pastors a large church with people from all walks of life and who are in different ages and stages of their spiritual journey. They share a love for God and service to humanity, and they also, he discovered, ask some big questions.
Recently, Mike and his best friend, also a pastor, wrote a book where they explore some of life's biggest questions. Welcome, Mike.
Great to be here. Thanks, Willie.
What is perhaps the biggest question you've ever been asked?
Probably the biggest one happened about 3 years ago. It was from a Christian young lady, and it was the why question. Mm. And her why was, why is all of this falling apart when I've done everything that God's asked me to do? I follow his lead. He seemed to lead here, then it fell apart. Then he seemed like he led here, and it fell apart. He seemed like he led here, and it fell apart.
Wow.
And that's a tough, tough question.
One. So, what kind of answers
did you answer it?
Well, I sat down and I listened to her story, and I've done this long enough now to, and in my own faith journey, I've gotten to a place where I don't feel like I have to defend God.
Right.
And so she wanted, you know, some kind of evidence, and I said, I think that's a fair thing to ask for God to show some kind of evidence to you that he's there. Seems reasonable, but That's on him. And so for me, it was, I honestly said at one a couple of times, I don't have a good answer for you.
Yeah.
I tried this aspect, that. She had been born and raised in a Christian family and a very good Christian person. And so she knew all the normal answers we give, but what oftentimes are very good, but none of them were working for her. And so it was just a long process of praying, talking, encouraging, and trying to get her into a better place.
Well, I think that's the difficult dilemma, though, is that she has all these answers, but yet she still has more questions. So when you say you worked with her, like, so did you start Bible studies with her, or...
It was more to sit
down. You didn't just leave her hanging look, I don't have any answers either.
No. But we met regularly as sort of a counseling kind of situation, and I'm no counselor by any stretch. But I felt a responsibility to try to help her walk through this journey, even though it was really messy. And we looked at a few passages, but it wasn't really a Bible study because what she wasn't looking for answers in that sense. She wanted the answers in her life. Why does this keep happening when she couldn't see? And everything I heard from her story never gave me any evidence I could turn to her and say, well, this sounds like you're the issue here. It sounded like unfortunate circumstance, another one. And she made some big moves across the country, kind of moves to these new jobs. She had worked since she got out of college in Christian organizations and had multiple times they seemed to have failed her. And so I think she just came to this breaking point of why does it keep happening when I want to do what God wants me to do.
It's really interesting to hear you say that, because I say to people all the time, if you're a Christian and you work for a Christian organization, you better be a strong Christian, because you quickly find out that even the Christians are human and they make mistakes. And when Christians make mistakes, you feel greater disappointment than when those who make mistakes make them and you expect those mistakes.
Right.
So you better be a strong Christian to work in a Christian organization.
Right.
I'd like to just transition a little bit and ask you, what is the biggest question you've ever asked? And where'd you find those answers?
For me, probably was the biggest one I asked was the question that ended up changing the total direction of my life. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I wrote this book with my best friend. We both had similar upbringings, non-religious families. He came to faith in Jesus during his teenage years. I came in my early 20s. we had a lot of similarities on how we got there, differences as well. But for me, it was this heartbreak of my first long-term girlfriend. We dated for, I think, about a year and a half. And
that was long, huh?
For me, it was at that time.
Yeah, of course.
And it set me on this tailspin, made me begin to ask questions. And my biggest question was, you know, the why, but more about why am I here? What's the purpose of life? And
you
I appreciate
hurt, huh?
yeah, but I appreciate that led me into this asking this much bigger question of why are we here? And it led me on a search to, if there's a God, then what does that mean? What does that look like? Which led me to ask some other questions, which ultimately led me to putting my faith in Jesus.
So
now, before you ask the next question, though, because I've heard you tell this story before, but I've never really had a chance to ask you up close and personal. You grew up unchurched?
Correct.
So you didn't have a faith background?
No. I had a grandmother that was a Seventh-day Adventist, and we would occasionally go to church with her, but it wasn't of any kind of regularity. I had some really good family friends that were Catholic, and I remember going once or twice with them. Had some kids from school that I remember going to church, you know, a couple times. But it was nothing of any consistent regularity. It was my folks had no faith, no interest at that time, and were when I grew up, 60s and 70s, it was sort of this parenting model of we don't want to force faith on their kids, let them decide. Yeah. But when you don't have anything to decide from, most people don't decide because there's just nothing there.
That hippie model. Huh?
Yeah.
So
then how do you go then from this, like, not even asking about why you're here to suddenly you've had this breakup and you're suddenly asking about if there is a God?
Right.
You know,
hey, when you get hurt that way, you need to find out.
For me, it was a very deep hurt,
absolutely.
And it was trying to put pieces together. Yeah. I was a journeyman butcher at the time. I worked nights, and there were some other Christians who were working there, and occasionally would talk to me, share their faith. And I actually was very resistive, even after I began to ask these questions. I was looking for every excuse not to go the religious route as much as possible.
Yeah.
But things just kept happening and falling into place. And I got to the place where I felt in my own life that this was based on a lot of things, but this was the right decision.
So the obvious question, what is the best source for answers to the big questions?
Well, I think you would expect me as a pastor to say the Bible.
Yeah.
And I think the Bible has some value. I think it depends on who's asking the big questions.
Yeah.
I think for people of faith, Christian people, I think the Bible is your automatic go-to. But I think we also have other pieces in our lives. We have friends. We may have family that can be an encouragement. Most of us have some wise counselors in our lives that when things get to a certain level, we turn to those wisest counselors. I think there's other authors that I've turned to that have help me shape and change how I think about things. So I think it's a broader way. I think the Bible has some great value. But again, if you're asking those questions and you don't have the Bible as your basis for things, to say the Bible has the answers is not really the perfect place to start.
Right, because I've heard people say, okay, well, sure, I'll read the Bible. And then you read something like in Deuteronomy where, you know, someone is, you know, there's an army killing a whole army of people or, you know, whatever it is. And so they're saying, well, I'm not finding an answer in there. So how do you help people, even when you recommend the Bible, how do you help them to begin this journey of understanding how to read the Bible?
Most often, and I found this happening more and more in the last few years, is trying to help people experience Jesus, come into a contact and a relationship with Jesus and see where that takes them. To really focus on Jesus as the foundation of their faith and their experience. I think the Bible adds to that, but if you can have that experience, it really gets you through a lot. And I think it gets you in a place where you look at everything from the basis of faith as opposed from the basis of doubt.
Good answer. Hold that thought. We want to talk about that some more. Mike's recent sermon series tackled some of life's big questions. As we go to break, let's watch a clip of him speaking on this topic.
So let me tell you right up front, who is this guy? My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors here at New Hope, and so that's who I am. I'll tell you a little bit more about myself in just a moment. Can I really answer the big question of life?
only the next 42 days will tell that, all right? So if you'll hang with me, I hope that at the end we'll have a chance to talk, and maybe you can tell me we at least answered some of them. My take is nobody can answer all the big questions of life, and somebody that tells you they can answer all of them, you probably should stay a long ways away from, right? But I think that there are some answers, and we'll try to investigate those and dig into those over these next few weeks.
Mike Spiegel pastors a large church and very diverse congregation where he's been tackling big questions. So, Mike, we're talking about these big questions. Why did you create a sermon series on this question, on answering big questions, and where did that come from?
It started a number of years ago. Like I said, my best friend is a guy I met in college. We've been best friends since, and also became a pastor. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of commonalities in our background and our life experiences growing up. And we had both been talking about, you know, in our particular denomination, we have a lot of great stuff for people that are Christians or have Christian backgrounds, and we can give them information to help them understand some things more. But we don't really have any kind of approach to people that that come from no faith background or some other variation. And so we thought, hey, what if we were created this resource? We tackle these big questions because we've narrowed the book down to these six questions that seem that most people ask. You know, is there a God? And if there is, then what does that look like, right? Aren't all religions the same? We hear that a lot. You know, can I trust the Bible? Why the Bible? It goes on in those kinds. But they're big questions that I think most people have asked at some point. Even I think people, Christians at some time, will say, is there a God? And so I was trying to answer those and to create a resource for other pastors and churches that if they wanted to tap into something like that, we have a whole, and it's part of this package we're glad to share with anybody. It's sermons to go along with it. There's a discussion group that goes along with it. There's the book that's divided up into this idea of 42 days, this six weeks of reading that has each day to read something. Each week is on a particular topic. And our goal is not to answer everybody's questions or all the questions about that particular topic, but it's to get people thinking in a way of sort of what if, and if there really is a God, then what does that look like?
So who should read this book, and what should I expect if I'm reading this book? You know, what is it going to do for me if I'm reading it?
Well, for you.
Or anyone.
But
right.
So who's the intended audience?
The intended audience would be somebody that doesn't have a lot of Christian or church history in their background. Maybe knows a little bit, but maybe not much, or maybe nothing at all.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you real quickly. But what if I do have a Christian background and I still have these same questions? Could I read your book?
Right. You asked me who was the intended audience. That was that section.
Okay.
But I think it applies to people at all stages. I think even Christians can at times, especially last few years, there's been lots of books and authors who've talked about the Bible and brought up all these challenges to the Bible. And sometimes to be reminded again about why it's a trustworthy document to turn to is important. I think the question of what happens when we die, for some people, that's not a thing we really think about too much until it's that moment that somebody close to us dies.
Yeah.
And now we begin to wonder, what does that mean?
So what has been the response to the book and to your sermon series?
We've had a great response. This is actually the second or third time I've gone through the series. This is the first time I've done it at New Hope. The book is actually a second printing. We've gone back and cleaned up some things. Mm-hmm. There's probably some more things that need to be cleared up, as always.
That's
as
always,
a book.
Yeah.
But we've had some really good responses, and I think it's partly because of our approach. Our approach, again, is not coming from, we have the answers, turn here and you're going to find them all. Mm-hmm. It's very much based on this concept that you don't have to understand everything to believe something. And our goal is to get them to a place to maybe believe something, and maybe in believing something that opens the door to believing something more.
Okay.
So give me a reason then. I mean, I know you're not trying to answer all the questions. And when I say me, I'm asking for the audience, right? Why I should believe in God. Just one thing. And I know there was something that you said that really touched us when we happened to visit your church one day and you were doing this series. And it had to do with oxygen.
Yes, it's part of what scientists call the Goldilocks phenomenon.
Yeah.
That this planet has so many things that are Goldilocks, right? Too hot, too cold, just right. There's so many things that are just right in order for us to be sitting here on this couch today. The oxygen level, the nearness to the sun. I mean, you go down through the gravitational pull from the different planets. Everything has to be just so accurate.
So precise, huh?
And it's multiple precision things that have to take place. And so many of those things, to say they happen by chance, really stretches the ability. And I think the other part of it is that this idea that scientists talk about, design gives evidence of a designer, that, that when you see how flowers, how the ecological system work, all those things, everything seems to work, has its place and do things just right. And so it's that. So for me, it was simply this idea of there's too much evidence. When I say evidence, it's not turn here, see, this is, look in the back of the pillow. It has, here it has a label from Pennies, but there it would have, God's label on it. It's not that kind of evidence, but it's the idea of how'd that pillow get there? Did it just happen? There's too many things that says, no, somebody, something's behind this, which gets you that place that...
More intentionality.
Yes.
That it was designed on purpose.
That everything just had to be... There's too many things that say just right. And that's even before we talk about how life began.
Yeah.
I grew up, again, not as a Christian. I grew up... the schools, I remember sitting in fifth or sixth grade, them talking about biology, evolution, and I always thought, I just had a hard time believing that, not as a person of faith, but just as a person thinking,
it's not reasonable.
Then the idea was that we all came from monkeys. Now that they've gone back to, we all start off as this
single
little
cell.
Amoeba, single cell.
Yeah.
But then it gets to the center, and this idea that, I believe there's a certain amount of evolution that takes place, that things adjust to its environment. But this idea of that... Before I ever needed eyes, my body began to form eyes thousands or more likely millions of years before I needed them because...
You were going to need them.
How was I going to... You'd have to say there was some design there to get you prepared to go out of the water to breathe air because the first few fish that jumped out didn't come back. And they didn't come back to tell their story either. So it was those kind of things that...
I'm going to have you go back to some of those specifics, but it's like saying, and I'm just picking Tesla, because it's an amazing vehicle, car.
Right.
So Tesla has all these features, and it's an electric car. And for us to look at this car, look at its makeup, and look at its design, and say, it just appeared. Just evolves,
right.
I mean, it wasn't here. And then,
all the parts had to fall into the place at the exact right time hook themselves together. Multiple different kinds of material, right? You have the metal parts, the leather parts, the rubber part,
All the beautiful design and it just showed up, I mean, it's millions of years and then it happened. Well, no, that doesn't make any sense any more than the universe and all the things, and the level of oxygen in the atmosphere so that we can breathe and not be suffocated. And all these little intricacies that we find in nature that are just right point to a master designer.
Right.
So these are questions that we need to grapple with and they need to make sense.
And I think, Willie, it's a reminder that while those are evidences for God, they don't prove God 100%. But from my perspective, everybody comes at this discussion from a faith base. Mm-hmm. Even if you believe in, there is an atheist. That's still a faith-based thing. Scientists you talk to, the gaps that we always historically talk about. And again, I'll be honest. I think there are issues with both creationism and evolution when you get down to all the things that you can prove.
Yeah.
But everybody still has faith that makes those connections, the dots. And if you go from, we're sitting here, and if we did come from monkeys, why isn't there a between monkey? Because it just makes sense that if this takes millions of years. So everything has a faith base to it. And that's important for people to understand that I have no faith. Well,
right, but you do.
Everybody
right,
does.
Right.
Thank you for that.
Sure.
When we come back, we'll ask Mike to help us answer some big questions our viewers and friends shared. Mike Spiegel knows what it's like to have questions about life, God, and the future. He's here to help us answer some of the questions our viewers and friends have. Our daughter Jessica is here. She just got married, and she has brought some questions for us to tackle.
Welcome, Jessica.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Or I should say Mrs. Hundley.
Sure.
So we also have a photo of Jessica's wedding, so that our viewers, many of our viewers, have been asking about the wedding. So we have a photo.
There it
awesome.
Is.
Awesome.
There it is. We have our little Rosario,
yeah,
our grand dogs. Anyway, thanks for coming.
Of course. Okay, so our first big question comes from Sarita, age 7, who asked, why did God make me?
So we're going to toss this to Pastor Mike.
Oh, okay.
I would say to Sarita that I think that God makes any of us because God loves people. You know, there's this great part that David writes about that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, that we're this thing that God puts together. And so I think there's an important idea behind that the reason God made you is because he loves you. He wants somebody to love. And I think it's the hope that you will in turn experience him and love him back.
Mm. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the second question is, where is the church when matters of justice arise, like equality, racial issues, etc.?
Wow.
That's a good question. And the reality is, the church doesn't always steps up when it needs to step up. And I have to acknowledge that sometimes we've fallen short. And yet, it is our responsibility to recognize that we need to, as a community of faith, acknowledge the fact that God gives dignity to every individual, that we are all created in the image of God, and we need to value that image of God in every individual. And when we show bias to groups, whether they are racial groups or language groups or ethnic groups, that we do harm to God's creation. And as the people of God, we need to, in fact, if we are living according to Scripture, we need to have that love is patient, love is kind for all humankind. And when that isn't happening, the church needs to look at itself in the mirror. And who is the church? We each are the church. We are representatives
yeah.
of God. And the truth is, if we really are converted, if we really have a relationship with Him, then we will demonstrate that in the way we respect and honor people that we're in relationship with.
And I would say that the question is, where is the church? And I can't answer where the church is, but I could tell you where the church ought to be. Mm. And that's right in the middle of those pieces. I think one of the things that we miss, one of the blessings I have at the church I pastor at New Hope, is that we are a very multi-ethnic, multi-generational, multicultural church. And one of the great things about that is that you get to be around people that aren't like you, mm. and that helps you understand them much better. I think one of the reasons we have some of these issues is that we don't know other people of different backgrounds, different ethnicities. And I think the whole idea of justice is sometimes we've thought, oh, that's something we have to stay out of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to stay out of it, Willie, as you talked about, is to ignore a huge part mm-hmm. Of the Bible in that discussion, because it's pretty clear in just a quick reading, especially with the Old Testament, Justice is a huge deal.
Do justly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only thing that I want to add too is to just to segue a little bit on what Willie was saying, and that is that we are the church also. And I don't ever want to forget that point, that I understand
yes.
that there's an institutional responsibility, but there's also a personal obligation. If I'm a Christian, I shouldn't be looking for my pastor or my church organization to be the sole person or organization responsible for this justice. Every
right.
day, I have an opportunity. It's not just the big issues. It's how I treat people every day, regardless of what their ethnicity is. It's how I treat my spouse. It's how I treat my sibling. It's how I treat my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a response. That's justice
as well.
And so sometimes I feel like we're more interested. We get caught up in the big, you know, pressure issues, mm-hmm. and that we have an opportunity every day in our lives to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly. And I think that as Christians, we need to take that very seriously.
Mm-hmm. And I think that segues back into our first question by the young lady,
why did God create me?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty clear, this idea of doing justly, how we treat others, loving mercy, not just for ourselves, but for others, and then to, you know, walking humbly and where we find ourselves.
If I were to add anything to it, and we've said a lot about it already, I'm going back to the image of God. Mm-hmm. Since we are all created in the image of God, we need to honor that image of God in every human being. Because if God is our Father, then we're brothers and sisters.
Right.
Yeah.
And if we're brothers and sisters, then we're the same. You know, we're more alike than we're unalike, and we tend to concentrate on minutia that really is insignificant. Because the truth of the matter is, there's only one race, the human race.
Right. And no race, as we typically divide it up, then rightly represents the image of God. Mm-hmm. Because if we're all made in the image of God, then we need all different people there.
Yeah.
Amen. Okay, and our third big question is, what dating advice would you give a Christian single millennial who is contemplating online dating? And there's a two-part question. What is your professional opinion of online dating?
We're going to throw that to Mike. He pastors a lot of millennials. Let's hear what he has to say.
Good luck. Maybe that's the way to start off. No, I know that things have changed. And I think that's a thing for us as not millennials.
As boomers.
to consider that things. I have a number of couples that I've been in part of premarital and ultimately having the privilege of officiating their weddings that met online. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be people are busy, especially
that's
in this area, a lot of stuff.
That's the way
and,
people do it now.
In fact, a couple of couples I just love because of just how well they go together, that's their story. And so I think there's, you know, there's lots of different ways people meet, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. And if you haven't met somebody else in some other ways, maybe that is an option. Everything has its risk, but also everything has some possibilities.
You know, I'm not so much about the modality, but I'm about what decisions you make once you meet that person. Right. How much you have in common and how much you have that's different. Well, to obtain a copy of Pastor Mike's book, please visit our website for a link to our resource page as listed on your screen now.
Thanks for watching today, and thank you to Pastor Mike and to Jessica. Thanks for being with us, and thank you for watching. Share your big questions with us on Facebook.
That's all for today's Real Family Talk. Join us again, where we'll talk more about strengthening families and inspiring hope.